politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, if a celebrity reaches out to you by way of a DM, it's a scam, right?
But what do you do if it actually is a celebrity?
No, it is not.
I said, what if it is?
Exactly. That's how you get scammed.
Even if you know it's a scam.
And with that, welcome to What the Hack, the true cybercrime podcast. I'm Adam Levin.
I'm Beau Friedlander.
And I'm Travis Taylor.
Becky Holmes, welcome to What the Hack.
Good to be here.
So, where are you today?
So, I am over in the UK. I'm in Stratford-on-Avon, where Shakespeare's from.
Do they know for a fact that he's from there? I've been there. It's kind of disorienting, the whole being where Shakespeare was thing.
Yeah, I mean, his house is around here.
Do they know it was his house, though?
Well, you've got his mum's house, his wife's house. If I were to look out of my window, I'd be able to see his wife's house from my window.
And did he have his wife in a different house for any particular reason?
I think probably most people would want that, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
You caught me on that one. So, Becky, has he been communicating with you on X, by the way?
I've had nothing from Shakespeare as yet, but I'm not ruling it out. You know, it could happen. I've seen people pretending to be Michael Jackson coming back from the grave. So, you know. We'll see.
What Adam's getting at is Becky Holmes' book, Keanu Reeves Is Not in Love with You, The Murky World of Online Romance Fraud. And it is unmissable at your bookstore. It is a gorgeous yellow and hot pink cover with hot pink Keanu Reeves eyes because he's a mask because it's not really Keanu Reeves. So how did this book happen? How did you start this project?
The whole thing came about completely by accident. I didn't set out to do this initially. I set up a Twitter account during lockdown because I was insanely bored. I'd done, oh, I don't know, like 20 jigsaws. I'd watched every single thing that had ever been made on television. I had nothing else to do. And social media was the only thing left. So I set up a Twitter account and straight away, I just had lots of messages, direct messages from people saying, hi, you're so lovely, you're so beautiful, I think you're the best thing ever. And I was just blocking them, deleting them, assuming they were up to no good. And then when my boredom got so bad that I could barely take it, I just started engaging with them and it ended up that I was wasting their own time for kind of my own amusement.
How did you get involved in the world of online scams?
I started putting the conversations up on my timeline and other people on Twitter seemed to really enjoy it as well. People messaged me saying I've actually been a victim of romance fraud. So I then started looking into that and became completely obsessed with the subject.
Did you get addicted to playing with these people who were approaching you on social media?
Yeah, and I still am. And I have no intention of ever becoming unaddicted because I love it.
So one of the hallmarks of addiction is obsession, right? Compulsion is another really important part of it. Now, if I were to create a new email address and send you a note saying, hey, I've been looking all over for you. I got your email address from your tailor. I saw you coming out of that shop and I can't stop thinking about you. Would you respond to me or would you just be like, whatever, and delete the email?
Well, initially, I would have just deleted. I mean, I don't ever respond to emails.
All right, rephrase. I got your phone number and I texted you.
Oh, absolutely not. Anything comes through my phone number, that is it, deleted. That's just like one step too close to home. Social media. Actually, I should also say, I don't ever mess around on Facebook either. I get a lot of friend requests from people who are very clearly romance fraudsters because I recognize some of the profile pictures. But Twitter and Instagram, yeah, I'll pretty much reply to those.
But is there something that turned you off to Facebook?
I think with Facebook, as I started to learn more about romance fraud, I learned that one thing that fraudsters love is to be able to get new photographs. So if I was to accept a friend request from somebody, they'd have access to all of my photos that I don't put out on social media. And that's just a step too far because they could easily then make a clone account of that. I'm quite careful what I put out on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook is stuff. It's me and my partner going for a walk or my friends and I having a drink. And I want to keep that away from this kind of silly side that I have with the fraud world.
So you mentioned recognizing scammers from their profile pictures. Now, Pilot Mark Patrick, who you write about in the beginning of the book, does Pilot Mark Patrick exist in many avatars all over the internet? Is there a photograph of an actual pilot that somebody has gotten through Facebook or somewhere and they're using it for scams?
So that's a real guy.
Yeah. And they're doing it. And so, and that's not uncommon. You just don't want to be a part of that particular game.
Yeah. So I've already been approached by somebody pretending to be me, where they've used my photo to set up a fake account. So it's not a pleasant feeling. And I don't know. I just think with Facebook, there's something more personal about that.
Well, I'm glad when I reached out to you that you didn't think it was Adam Levine that was trying to start up a conversation with you. So
I didn't. I had a good look at you. Yeah.
So let's get back to the book. Now, there are a lot of stories in here. I love them all, but one that really stuck in my head was the one about Sammy. Can you tell us about what she went through?
Okay, so Sammy's story, it was quite long, quite complicated, and very technologically advanced, if I remember rightly. So Sammy was, when I spoke to her, around about the same age as me, so sort of early to mid-40s, and she was getting divorced. She had children, actually not particularly young, but sort of teens and upwards. And she'd been speaking to a guy who'd said that he was American, and I believe that he said that he was an engineer or a marine. It was one of the sort of stereotypical professions. Now, Sammy and this guy, they spoke for a really, really long time, and it was absolutely amazing luck for the fraudster, because just after they started speaking, COVID hit, which meant that, of course, there was absolutely no way that they could meet in person. And it also meant that he had a reason to say that he'd lost his job. So, you know, COVID hitting was a fraudster's dream, because it just gave every single excuse that they could possibly need. They didn't have to come up with various reasons.
Now, to clarify there, scammers will often, one of the very first beats of a scam that sets off, for me, the red flag, and I'm wondering if you think so too, Becky, is that inability to meet in person or even get on the phone often.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why they choose the jobs that they do with the romance fraudsters. So, you know, the army, while they're away a lot of the time because of where they are. Oil rig workers, obviously they're in the middle of the North Sea or wherever. Pilots, of course, they're flying around all over the place. So it's very much the stereotype.
Was this over text or did they actually speak on the phone?
So Sammy and this guy, they started messaging through Instagram and then they moved over to WhatsApp. They did speak on the phone very regularly. He wanted to video call, but Sammy is very shy. So again, it kind of worked in her favor that she said no. When people were saying fraudsters won't want to talk to you on video chat, she was thinking, okay, well, in that case, he must be real. They spoke for quite some time. She sent money over to him. He had a lot of stories around his dad being poorly. He needed to fly various places. He needed to go somewhere for work. He needed to borrow money for equipment to start up a new business. There was a lot going on. And it became very complicated. And at one point, he said to her, right, you need to go onto my bank for me. They've locked me out. If I give you my details, can you please go in and sort some stuff out for me? Now, this was a really interesting one because people don't generally feel comfortable giving out their bank details. So it was an excellent way of making Sammy feel that they had this real connection, this real trust. So she said, okay, fine, I'll do what you need to. When she went onto his bank, everything was exactly as it should be, in inverted commas. It was his name, his date of birth, where he said he lived. And it said in there that there were a couple of £100,000. So she was thinking, wow, okay. And again, thinking that that's another sort of proof point that he's not a fraudster. She came out of the bank and continued to send money and to lend him money.
This spring, get out there, enjoy the weather, and recapture the magic of riding a bike with Electric e-bike.
With an amazing variety of models built for riders of all abilities, it's never been easier to fall in love with riding again. Plus, every electric e-bike ships free and only requires quick, toolless assembly.
This is my first ever e-bike, and the experience has just been great. I was a little bit intimidated at first because I hadn't gone biking in a while, but the 500-watt motor that the electric e-bike comes with really gives you a nice little boost, especially if you're trying to go uphill or pick up some speed.
Data shows that e-bike riders take their bike out more often. That means you get more exercise, more exploration, and wait for it, fresh air.
And riding an e-bike isn't, like, it's not cheating. It's just making it possible for you to be out there longer on each ride. And speaking of things going a little slower, you can finance an electric e-bike for as little as $49 a month.
Get into spring with Electric e-bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com. And please mention that What the Heck with Adam Levin sent you in the post-checkout survey.
That's electricebikes.com.
Let's talk about weight loss. Most of us have been there, struggling with the ups and downs. You lose some weight, then it creeps back.
But forget those endless cycles of juice cleanses, soup diets, and the latest fad workouts. There's a better way.
The Rogue Body Program pairs a weekly weight loss shot with a real lifestyle change so you can lose weight and actually keep it off.
Need support? Rogue's got you covered every step of the way. And guess what? You can do it all from the comfort of your own home. No more doctor's appointments, no more waiting rooms. It's that simple.
Ready to take charge of your weight? Head over to ro.co/Adam to sign up today.
Average weight loss is 15 to 20% in a year. That's with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/Adam.
Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 after that. Medication costs are separate.
That's ro.co/ADAM.
Now, the interesting thing about Sammy's story is that at one point, something happened where she thought, you're not who you say you are. He said, no, I'm not. And he rang her. He video called her. For the first time, she decided to answer. It was a young black Nigerian guy in his, I think he was about maybe 18, 19. He was really young. She said, who the hell are you? And he said, my name is Smith. He said that was his real name, that he'd been pretending to be this person for over a year. And when she said, why would you do this? He said, because there's no jobs here. I'm struggling. This is how I make my money. But here's the thing. He then said to her, look, I've done this. I feel awful about it. But during the course of what we've done here, I have actually fallen in love with you. And I do want to make a go of it with you. And I really hope that you can forgive me and we can start again.
Okay, so Adam, you love this story. So what was the guy's name before he was Smith?
He was Rob.
Okay, so Rob, what a good name for a scammer.
Yeah, sure.
Rob was going King Billy Bomb Balls, as Ezra Pound would say, to get all of her money. And as collateral, he had shown that he had a lot of money, but it was tied up. And that was why he needed these loans. All makes sense. Or maybe it was a spoofed website showing an account that wasn't real at all.
Yeah, I think that it was one of these ones. So, you know, with the pig butchering scams, for example, where they're very technologically advanced and they're able to put up, you know, fake trading sites. I think that was an equivalent to this because she was able to go in and, you know, look all around it.
Okay, so he's convinced her he has money and he's sorry for tricking her.
Yeah. He said, my name is Smith. I have actually fallen in love with you. So she said, okay, let's give it a go. And she was, as you can imagine, it was an absolute nightmare for her because she'd been having this kind of intimate relationship with somebody who actually turned out to be younger than her eldest child. So they sort of tried to make it go long distance, but inevitably the trust wasn't there and it just kind of fell apart.
Okay, so how much money had he taken at this point?
That Sammy didn't send him a lot. So she didn't send him thousands and thousands like some of the people that I'd spoken to. She'd sent him enough. But the last time that I did speak to her, her and this guy had stopped speaking, and she still missed him. Even though she knew what had happened, she still really missed him. And she was still wondering whether, could it have been real? Did something just happen? You know, there was this real reluctance to let go of this horrible, horrible character.
Does this happen a lot?
It's more common. I think what I'm hearing is that fraudsters are becoming, romance fraudsters, are becoming more aware of the fact that we're catching on to them. So I think what they've discovered is that if they say, actually, yeah, you've caught me, but during this process, I have fallen in love with you, it gives them another bite of the cherry. So when I first started talking to people about this, I only really heard a couple of stories along these lines. Over recent months, it seems to be more and more common. I've had people message me and say, look, this person has admitted to who they are. Should I give them a go? So it's another tool that they're using. I liken this to how I was when I was gambling. I used to sit and put money in and put money in on my phone, and I'd be thinking, oh, you know, and I knew it was bad, but I kept doing it because the second that I stopped is that second when I had to realize what I was doing and I had to face up to it and I had to deal with everything. The people that I've spoken to who have been through this kind of double scam, I really feel it's incredibly similar. You know, that the second that they say, right, okay, this is a fraudster, I have been defrauded, the second they do that is when they have to look at their bank, take in what's happened, start emotionally rebuilding themselves.
So, you know, one of the things that happens to anyone who has an addiction is they hit a bottom. And that sounds like what's happening here. Every time they get that message saying, my darling, how are you? My darling or my dear is like, doesn't feel good. Loving, 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 and then stopping. We all know what that feels like. It sucks. And these scammers seem to be preying on exactly that chemical reaction. I think the double dipping is pretty fascinating, though. Have you heard of anyone who actually got double dipped and lost some money that way?
Yeah. So I did speak to another lady only about 6 months ago, actually, who had, I think she'd handed over about £15,000. So what's that, about $18,000 maybe, the first time around. Then she found out who this person actually was. He said, I still love you. She handed over around about another £5,000. There was kind of an intervention, if you like. But she went on to lose a lot of money. It's, you know, that I do wonder whether we think that she's stopped sending money, but the problem is once you're in one of these relationships where it's all based around secrecy, you don't know. This lady could still be sending money.
We've talked a lot before about the overlap between addiction and romance scams. How do you think that they're related?
Well, we actually had a guest on the show whose mother was addicted, and she would just do the equivalent of sneaking out the window on a bunch of sheets tied together.
Yeah.
To go meet with her scammer, but she was just giving him money that, in her point of view, was, I'm spending your inheritance and I can and I will.
Again, it's the same with the gambling. You become really, really good at lying. It's saying, oh, you know, actually, I'm just nipping out. We haven't got so-and-so, or there's something wrong with the car, or, you know, whatever it is. Or, oh, there's a problem with the bank. I don't know why I can't get that money. We become, as in any form of addict, you become very good at hiding things. And it's the same with romance fraud. And of course, also, there's the same level of shame as well, because you know that actually no one's forcing you to do this. It's you. You're doing it. And you feel embarrassed about that.
And you hide things from yourself.
It's easier to hide things from yourself than anybody else. Other people can see it. And it's when you look back and think, oh, God, they all knew.
As with addiction, falling for a scam has nothing to do with intelligence. In fact, you talk about a detective, a very bright, accomplished woman who was a victim of one of these scams, right?
Yeah, and she actually met the fraudster in person as well. So she is over here. She was similar age to me. She met somebody on a dating site, which, of course, automatically that's their one step ahead because they know that you're looking for romance. So they don't even have to kind of wheedle the way in with you because they know that that's what you're looking for. They met up quite a few times. He would spend the night at her house. She never got to go to his house. There was always a reason, but they were always kind of fairly plausible reasons. Now, something happened with his car, apparently, and he needed to replace his car. So he asked her if he could borrow some money. She was a bit funny about it, but she'd made it very clear to him that she was a detective. So in her mind, understandably, she thought, well, he's not going to try and defraud a detective. She lent him this money. He turned nasty. And eventually, she ended up finding out the truth about him by breaking protocol and using the police database to actually look him up. So it was actually misconduct where she was. But she said she felt like she was going insane. She needed some answers about this person and she could find nothing about him. Now, she didn't get her money back. However, he was charged with various things because when she found him on the police system, he was wanted for several other frauds. So he was a serial fraudster who'd managed to rope in this very clever UK detective. It was insane to sit and listen to this because I was sitting opposite this very bright, capable, attractive woman and she was coming out with this stuff and it sounded so crazy. But of course, it made perfect sense to me.
One of the things that we know about people who are scammed is that they are trusting. And I suspect one of the reasons they're trusting is because they're trustworthy. So in other words, the people who probably fall for these scams more than anybody are the people who would never in a million years do a scam and who would never think of doing a scam. Or, for instance, a detective who has access to a database of criminals and doesn't use it. Now, I do a show about scams with my friend Adam and Travis, and the minute I think something's a little screwy, I have a friend I call up who has access to quite a few databases, and I say, can you please look this up? And he goes, oh, yeah, don't talk to that person, or no. But it's the first thing I do. Is it because I'm smart? No, it's because my mind is in the gutter constantly, because I think about crime constantly, because that's my job. Now, I have a feeling you also have a bit of a gutter sensibility in the fact that you tell me about that. Like, why are you so focused on this? What, is it the same as me? Like, do you just, like, you find it fascinating and you kind of like playing with fire a little bit?
Yeah, I suppose it's because initially it was funny to me to be wasting these people's time. So I was entertaining myself. Then it became entertaining to other people. And then when I started talking to actual victims of romance fraud, I would go to their houses and we would talk over a cup of tea and I would see what had happened to them. I started getting really annoyed by it. And to be honest, I think that's now what the motivation is. I'm irritated by these people. How dare they? I mean, how absolute dare they? And also, I'm annoyed with the media as well for how they portray the victims of romance fraud. So it just means that whenever I can, I will go out there and start, you know, giving it my all about how we shouldn't be using certain phrases and we should be doing things differently. And I find the motivator for me, I've just become very angry by the gall of these people. Seeing what it's done to them and if they've lost friends or family over it and how they've had to rebuild their lives emotionally and financially. It's just, and then one of these people messages me, I'm sort of consumed by utter loathing. I think that's probably why I'm still doing it.
You're like the Punisher. You're like the, you know, you're like a nice tea drinking Punisher.
Also the town crier when it comes to these kinds of scams. But how do we debunk the myth that only gullible or foolish people fall for these kinds of scams?
I have a thing about the term fall for. So we use it. I think we need to get rid of that. I think language plays a really big part. I think when we talk about falling for, it makes it sound as if it's not as serious as many other crimes. And it sounds like it's just something that someone walks into. So I think the problem with romance fraud is that, you know, we all think that it's only stupid or gullible people. Fact is, it is anybody. And the reason for that is because we're human. We want to be loved and we want to love. So I think the problem is that we're always, as humans, going to be susceptible to something like this. There's not really, other than education, there's not really a way to debunk this.
And you think, based on your book, you think there's insufficient education out there about this, right?
Yeah, I think we need to be talking about things in a different way and we need to be making people less embarrassed about what's happened to them. And we should be encouraging people to report romance fraud. It's never anywhere near that figure. It's 10 times more because people don't want to report it. They're embarrassed. They think that whoever it is they report to is going to think that they're stupid or that there's no point reporting it because they're never going to get their money back or whatever it might be. And I think that with some education, with people being more sensitive, being more open and not treating victims with such derision, if we were to just find a way to stop being so absolutely repulsive, then, you know, we could help people a lot more. Over here, if something comes out in the national press and it says so-and-so has lost £50,000 to a fraudster, if you go onto the online version of that story and you read the comments underneath, there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of people going, oh my God, what a surprise. Look at her, you know, desperate middle-aged woman. I'm not surprised she fell for this. Blah, blah, blah. You never see anybody actually standing up for that person. It's quite incredible. We all jump on this, the bandwagon of having a go at somebody.
How can we promote a more supportive environment for the victims of romance scams?
So empathy plays a huge role in how we should be talking to victims of romance fraud and dealing with the problem. One thing that I talk about in the book is that there is a large correlation between what victims of romance fraud go through and victims of domestic abuse in terms of this being isolated from friends and family, you know, the gaslighting that somebody goes through, this using silence as a punishment, grinding down somebody's confidence so they don't want to report it. We wouldn't dream of saying these days, well, you're stupid to have fallen for domestic abuse. We simply wouldn't say it because we've moved on, rightly so, now got empathy for that crime. That's where we need to get to with romance fraud.
You know, we were talking about the detective who fell for a scam, but we haven't talked much about scammers. For every scam we learn about, there's 10 we don't know about. And for every 10 that we don't know about, there's probably thousands that don't get even started because the scammers suck. So, you know, while there's this factor about being gullible or not gullible, there's also the other side of it, which is a clever scammer or an idiot. And so let's just say you have a super clever scammer. Well, I think you're toast.
And this is exactly why I think that anybody is susceptible.
And so what do you do? I've always said this about dating apps, and I know that it's easy for me to say I've been in a relationship for a while, but I wasn't always, and I was on those apps, but I met my current partner in the dog park, walking my dogs. And like, there's something to be said for that face-to-face.
There is. I think this is where, obviously, COVID was brilliant for the fraudsters because we couldn't really do that. And now, of course, online dating is so common. In fact, you know, if you're single and you're looking for a partner, that's what you do. I met my fiance on Tinder.
Undeniably, the dating apps are a thing, but like maybe one of the things that we need to drive home is don't leave the app. Don't leave
the app. Oh, this whole thing about them getting you onto another platform straight away, it's such a red flag. You've exchanged 3 sentences and they say, can I have your number or can I have your email or can we talk on Google Chat or whatever? No, you can't. Stay where you are.
No. So here's the deal. I use Yahoo Finance. I use it to make money because it works, not just because they're a sponsor of the show. Heck, I've been using them for years before they ever called to become a sponsor. I do a lot of investing, and I need to make split-second financial decisions, and that's where Yahoo Finance comes in. I trade stocks, and I trade options, and you can't trade them in a vacuum. You've got to know what's going on. Yahoo Finance gives you the opportunity to look at the whole picture. I mean, breaking news, editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts. I love the customizable charts. They have it all. At Yahoo Finance, I'm part of a community of over 90 million users. You heard me. 90 million folks use Yahoo Finance because they're helping you on your way to financial success. Visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com, yahoofinance.com. So you're really interested in scams. I mean, you wrote a great book about them, but you have your own story.
So while I was talking to victims of romance fraud, I realized that actually it really resonated with something that I had been through as well. And that is that I had a partner and we met, we were in a face-to-face physical relationship. We were together for some time. We got engaged and I thought he was great. Now, he told me a lot of very strange stories when we were together. And I knew some of these stories were absolutely absurd. And I knew this. And we would argue. I would say, why are you telling me such ridiculous lies? This is silly. And he would come up with stuff. Now, I did something which is very, very common with what people do when they're in a fraudulent relationship. I ignored it. I purposefully ignored it because I just wanted it to go away. If I'd had to have dealt with it, I would have to have faced up to the fact that I was in a relationship with somebody who wasn't who they said they were. And I didn't want to do that. Now, ultimately, it did literally drive me mad. And he would gaslight me. So he would say, well, I never said that. And I would think, but you did. I've got that down on a message. I've got it on my phone. And then he would tell me that I must have sent it to myself. And I was going slowly more and more insane with this. Now, you know, I'm a clever person. I've got a first-class degree. I've got lots and lots of post-grad qualifications. I'm an intelligent woman. But I just went along with it because I didn't know what else to do. And I wanted this so much to be real. I wanted him to be who I thought he was initially. And somehow my mind kind of closed off this logical part. And I thought, right, well, I'm just going to ignore all of these misgivings. I'm going to ignore all this evidence in front of me. And as I was starting to research the book, I came across confirmation bias and I realized how common that is, not just in relationships, but in all sorts of things. And it was only after I'd gone literally nuts and had, you know, all sorts of therapy that I was able to link, wow, actually what these people who went through romance fraud went through is, you know, 95% the same as what I went through as well. I mean, I was madly in love with him. And for me, we were together for some time, but even at the end, when he would walk in the room, I would still have that endorphin hit. He made me laugh and I found him really funny. We would have great conversations. We would go out and spend time together, do things together. He would tell me wonderful things that he loved about me. All of those endorphins were still there.
And that, maybe that's one of the main points of romance scams, is they are a simulacrum for the real thing. They really come pretty close. And the better the scammer, the closer they come to a true experience of being in love. And we all know that being in love feels good.
Well, we also have a truth default bias too, which is where we want to believe that people are always telling the truth, even where in our hearts we think maybe that's not the case. We're still oriented toward that.
We are. And this is exactly what I was saying about no matter what we do as humans to get in the way of fraudsters, we're never going to be able to get in the way of the fact that humans want to love and to be loved. And we want to desire and to be desired. While I was researching the book, I actually spoke to a chap called Professor Timothy Levine, who came up with the truth default theory. And he was fascinating. He said how, as human beings, we believe the vast majority of what we hear because we have to. Now, when I was talking to him, I was thinking, oh, that's rubbish. You know, I'm really cynical. You know, that's absolute nonsense. What are you talking about? How did you get to be a professor? Now, when I actually thought back on it, once we'd stopped speaking, I thought, you know, he's absolutely right. If you think about every single thing that you do and you think and you say throughout the day, it's all based on assuming that it's true. You said that you were who you say you are. I believed it. I ordered a coffee from somebody today. They brought me the coffee that I asked. We undergo truthful transactions 99% of the time. So we do have that propensity to believe. And this is exactly what romance fraudsters prey on. I had a conversation with Timothy Levine about this, and it actually works both ways as well, because the fraudster is assuming that we're going to believe, and they're also assuming that we are who we say we are as well. So when I'm having a conversation with one of these people and I'm saying the most ridiculous stuff that I can possibly think of, he assumes that I'm actually coming out with normal stuff, which is why he doesn't double check. So actually, it can work against them as well.
Before we go, I guess the big question is, how do you tell the difference between genuine romantic interests and potential scammers when you're talking to them online?
Oh, it's a tough one. And just on cue, my actual fiance has just walked through the door, just talking about how to find out whether someone online is actually into you or whether they're after your money.
Oh, by meet them?
You're no use, go away.
Sure. I thought that was pretty good advice.
So obviously we do everything online now, and dating is huge, and we're always going to keep dating online. I think, you know, in order to find out whether somebody is interested in you or not, one thing that romance fraudsters do is they will ask you a lot of questions because they think that that's a way to get you interested, believe that they want to know you. But I think there's got to be some to and fro on that. So when you ask them a question, make sure that they're answering you. Make sure that they're actually reading what you're saying and they're replying to you, because it means that they're engaging, and it also means that you're speaking the same language, which of course is a big thing as well. And then I think meet them. Make sure that you can meet them. If you can't meet them for a few weeks or whatever, for video call. When I first met my other half on Tinder, I said to him, you know, we're planning to meet. Can we have a video call? And he said, no, I don't want to do that because I'm not very good with technology. And I thought, oh, right. And I very nearly didn't go ahead with it because I thought, well, clearly you're a fraudster. As it turns out, he's just really bad with technology and actually couldn't work the video function. But I think being able to see who it is that you're going to meet, I think that's all you can do. And, you know, of course, the usual online safety things apply. So let somebody know where you're going on your first date, that kind of thing, if you're meeting a stranger.
So is that where Keanu Reeves comes in?
Do you know, I could leave Keanu Reeves. I'm not particularly fussed about him. But the reason I chose him is because tens of thousands of Keanu Reeves accounts out there. He's the most impersonated celebrity on Twitter, which is my main platform. And he's got, the actual Keanu Reeves himself has got no social media at all. He doesn't engage whatsoever. Every time I get a new Keanu Reeves contact me, I think, oh, great, I've got another Keanu. So I do now have kind of a soft spot for those. But my favourite one was a guy pretending to be Brad Pitt, who I took a picture of my best friend on my kitchen floor. I'd covered him in ketchup and I'd put a knife next to him. And this Brad Pitt guy had said, I don't know, that he wanted something. And I said, I can't talk to you. I've killed this tumble dryer repairman. And I sent him this picture of my best friend. And I love the fact that this guy pretending to be Brad Pitt immediately said, I've got a friend that can sort that out. And passed me on to somebody who he was pretending to be from the US military, who then said that he'll come and clear the body for €30,000. It was seamless that, you know, Brad Pitt, this guy would have this kind of amazing contact. General Mark Milley, he was pretending to be, who I believe at the time was about as high as you can get in the American military.
Chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
There you go. I've got his email address now, Adam.
Anyway, Becky, this has been awesome. I loved your book.
Oh, I'm really pleased.
I love your Twitter, and we so appreciate you coming on our show.
Oh, I've loved it. You're more than welcome.
Once again, the book is called Keanu Reeves is Not in Love with You. It's by Becky Holmes. It's published by Unbound, and you can get it wherever you get books.
Thank you very much.
And now it's time for our tinfoil swan.
Our paranoid takeaway to keep you safe on and offline.
Have you guys had the talk with your children?
They're a little young for that, but they know about the tooth fairy.
I think Bo means the other talk.
Well, there are a few, I guess. I'm talking about the sextortion talk.
I mean, I probably did have it with Jaeger before he knew what I was talking about, but in an age-appropriate way. You know, be careful with people you meet online. Don't send pictures. I mean, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, we just call it stranger danger, but they're not really online just yet, so...
Well, you've heard me say it before, but it's worth repeating. When you're online, you're in the worst neighborhood in the world on the drunkest night of the year. So, listen, how do you have the talk?
Well, what you said works, but I think you can get the idea across without...
Socioeconomic cliches, maybe?
Touché. Sextortion targets young people by starting a conversation. It seems like a love connection, but unlike a real connection, it quickly veers into an exchange of photographs, usually nudes.
And younger people just might not understand that they're being targeted. A major red flag is being asked to move a conversation to a messaging app like WhatsApp.
The scammers need you to be somewhere that isn't moderated. I mean, the goal is always the same. Pay up or I'll send your nudes to the people closest to you. At the end of the day, You gotta tell your children that the internet may seem like fun, but it can be dangerous.
And that they shouldn't send nudes?
I mean, yeah, totally. But most importantly, the door should be kept open for your kids so they can come to you if something does happen.
Oh, and you accuse me of cliches.
Leaving the door open isn't really a cliche, Oxford boy. It's a metaphor.
Just because it's a metaphor doesn't mean it's not also a cliche.
And that is our tinfoil swap.
What the Hack with Adam Levin is a production of Loud Tree Media. You can find us online at adamlevin.com and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Adam K. Levin.